Welcome to the Hot Literati. The Hot Literati is my collective of cool, hot, well-read people. My name is Haley, and I'm so happy that you're here. I'm listening to a little Scriabin. It's a Thursday night when I'm recording this. It's like 1:30 a.m. My sleep schedule is ruined, but I'm really excited to share this piece because it's just like, this is a long time in the making. These are just ideas I've been chewing on for a very long time, and I've been reading some really interesting stuff that's just kind of like supplemented it, and having like, I've been having really interesting conversations around this topic too. So without further ado, let's get into it. Of course, we're fucking anxious, a manifesto for Gen Z. I bought a burner phone in Kansas. My anxiety was peaking before I left New York to go home for a couple weeks. I get pretty bad safety anxiety, but I didn't really realize it until I was 19. I was working on the media team for a presidential campaign one summer. I spent half of my day refreshing Twitter and poring over the timeline, looking for opportunities to chime in. That summer was the first time a shooting happened in a Walmart. My stomach dropped reading that headline. Because when you read a headline like that, you imagine it happening to you. Then you imagine it happening to your loved ones. And there's something deeper than the terror that is terrifying. Maybe it's the unpredictability, the lack of control. Actually, yes. Reflecting Men by Sally Klein talked about how catcalling isn't necessarily violent, but the sneakily egregious part of the violence comes from the threat of interruption. The idea that the situation is now unpredictable and taking up some of your mental space. And the unknown is already scary enough. The unknown is what makes us anxious. But then you add that terror to another person. You place that unpredictability on a faceless person, on a headline, on your own imagination running wild, and it becomes debilitating. I went to Jersey City that same summer when I was 19, then again when I was 20, for the 4th of July, and I was terrified the entire time. Terrified of crowds coupled with the loud noises, terrified of my own fear. And over the past couple years, when two happened in elementary schools, they gutted me and made me terrified and heartbroken all at once. I was in Georgia with one of my kindest friends when I heard about the one in Texas, and I looked around at my surroundings. I was in a beach town, and suddenly I was afraid of the ambiguous people in the little houses. And then I thought about my family, wondered what they were doing, wished there was a way to lock them in our house forever. And the most recent one, I don't even want to look it up to find the city. I was sitting at my desk at work. I felt it in my body. I read news story after news story that night, as if understanding the situation, this person, would help me predict the future, keep myself safe, keep my loved ones safe. And that night, I changed the settings on my news app to show, to only show me Eater, Cosmo, and Women's Health. Because I realized that mentally pouring into something like that wasn't healthy. And I didn't want to be afraid of my neighbor. And it helped for a bit, but it left other things for my mind to chew on. I'd be fed stuff on social media, content designed to excite or depress, content to anger, content built to make me engage. Social media is fascinating to me. I'm writing about it in a little fiction, because developmentally, I don't fully understand what it did to me, to us. No adolescent should be taken up with the performance of a digital coming of age while they are still trying to figure out who they are. We already have all the data. We see the way people engage with one another. We see the decline in mental health. Jean Twenge's iGen has these really incredible bar charts that show how IRL interaction with someone is almost always net good for joy and contentment, while digital interaction is almost always net bad. So what happens when your most formative years were net bad? Bad for the mind, maybe for the heart? And take my word for iGen instead of buying it, because the writing itself is flat and uninteresting, and she is mean in it. She calls Gen Z Generation Pussy at one point. You would be afraid of stuff too if your ability to properly process dopamine and stimuli was shattered by a little metal box and or two apps at the age of 12, Jean, wouldn't you? So here we are. We are anxious. We have depression. We're terrified of the world. I could go on to a whole tangent about how we're scared because the 24-hour news cycle ramped up in the 90s and everyone thought that the whole world was awful. So parents stopped letting their children play around the neighborhood and people stopped inviting neighbors over and communities deteriorated from our fear of one another. And then we got computers and then phones and stopped using third locations. And now here we are. And I did go on a tangent, I guess, but it's a parenthetical one if you're reading this. So you technically did not have to read it. But I'm happy if you did, and if you're listening to the podcast version of this, you did have to read it because it's audio, so thank you. So what do we do? And now I'm going to switch to the first person singular for a little, because this experience is subjective to me, and I don't know if I would recommend yet. I bought a burner phone so I could completely unplug but still be reachable to family when I wanted to be off of social media, off of news, off of content, in the real world. And it's so easy to say that, in the real world, and then throw the phrase away. But I think we need to understand how absurd it is to have experienced so much of a childhood digitally. Stanislaw Lem has a short story called The Princess Ineffable that captures this absurdity perfectly. This king wants this princess, so he has this other guy make her in this magic, like, television box. And this king is going to go in there with her, but he takes a closer look at the digital recreation of the princess and decides not to go into the TV. And the guy who made the TV is peeved. One, because he put a lot of work into the TV, and throwing away your work sucks. Two, because he was going to smash the TV and trap the king or the king's consciousness in the TV. And the king didn't go in because the digital princess wasn't as pretty as the real one, he said. Well, the people in our little black boxes and our TVs and such are very, very pretty. Very pretty. So pretty that we see people morphing their faces, their makeup, etc. to match the people in the TV. So we jump in, into the TV. And then the people in there aren't real. They aren't real. Because even a message has to go through all these loops and holes. It loses a lot of its life, its tone, its expression, its cadence, a little rasp, maybe some flirt, maybe some annoyance, until it is spit back out to you, laying down alone in your room, probably too late at night. And maybe you're a little sad. You're trying to get at the meaning in a text. Maybe you're anxious. Or maybe you open social media and see some crazy shit, a concerning post, something depressing in the world, and then you're definitely anxious. But need I remind you, you are lying alone in your room, and the information you've just consumed has no imminent effect on you. You don't need to know everything going on in the world. Knowing will not change your ability, or lack thereof, to control the future. The real problem here isn't even social media, though. Yes, it's addictive, but it's also good in some ways. And it's funny because this was one of the earliest pageant questions I remember practicing when I was like 13 or 14. In pageantry, you're taught to toe the line with your answers so you don't alienate any group, but I truly believe that it can be good. My grandparents have a Facebook portal. My grandma stands there sometimes and talks to me, and then my grandpa stoops down and he holds up one of their cats to the camera. And someone really brilliant said to me yesterday that technology is morally neutral. And I agree. I think Hofstadter writes really intriguing stuff about how if we do succeed in creating fully conscious, feeling AI, sentient AI, then they will be as scared and loving and in need of care is human consciousness. But that is a tangent I will not go on. The problem is that we've created technology that makes people lonely. Technology that strips people of having a tactile experience of the world. Technology that removes the human part of being human. That chews our attention spans down to a nub and promises us the world if we will only sit down and look at a screen. I've been spending around 40 minutes a day on personal social media, if that, and it's interesting because I notice that I am more present. My attention span is growing quickly, but at the same time, even this level of being in the world now is overwhelming. It's almost like there's too much and too little happening all at once. Like my brain has been formed to constantly float on this ephemeral digital plane as I'm walking around and talking to people. And since it can't when I'm not feeding it, it'll find other stuff to pick up and worry about. And the real plane, the physical one, well, I think I kind of feel like a baby in a weird way. Like even now, I'm looking at my desk. There's a mug to my right, a mug to my left, and my brain goes, look, Haley, there's a mug here and there. There's a thick stack of handwritten pages, my manuscript, behind my laptop. My brain goes, there is your novel. You should probably work on it. So it's like I'm learning how to be in the world all over again, I think. And things still make me anxious. I'll get a kick of imposter syndrome here or there, a pang when I think about the fact that I haven't seen my brother in over a year. But I'm thinking about problems that are in my world, problems that I can control-ish. And even the big things, the scary things in the news that I can't control, feel connected to this same flaw in this way of being. Dostoevsky is the best person, in my opinion, for exploring the motivations of people we would often think of as evil. Rejection and loneliness make people do crazy things. And we end up in this weird loop where sometimes the people that we're afraid of are people that we're afraid of for the same reason that we're afraid of them. Because we're all alone in our deteriorated little rooms. And I think that we have to be willing to take a chance to go back out into the world. It's like we're all in Plato's cave, watching projections of one another, pointing fingers and trying to understand how to better protect ourselves from conflict. But what happens when the conflict is in your own mind? And if you talk to the person in the cave room next to you, and then the person in the cave room next to them, you'd realize that everyone is thinking, is feeling the same way, and that the projections of conflict would just dissipate if you just went outside. And you could hold hands with your neighbors and go outside together. And I got the burner phone to break myself of the habit of using social media like a crutch. I don't want it in the lulls of my day anymore. I will have dedicated times for it, but I'm not going to open it instinctively, subconsciously. No more going on my phone instead of sitting in uncomfortable silence. Or telling myself that looking at some random person's photo dump is more important than listening to my parents or roommates or coworkers tell me about their days or their feelings or anything, because they are spoken words in the air. And even the idea that we can move our mouths and create sound and hear and see and experience one another is so beautiful. It is so beautiful. And I felt so present and grateful. And the only things taking up space in my mind were things in my vicinity, things that mattered to me in that moment. So, Gen Z, what do? I think we use social media moderately and sparingly as a supplement for life, as a compromise for when you can't have the real deal, like long distance. As performance art, as a digital diary, but we have to stop treating it like it's its own life. Because when I got my burner phone and was out in the world in Kansas, then back in the world here in New York, I noticed the little things. I talked to more people. I realized that in a weird way, I'm just beginning to teach myself how to be in the world on one plane, in an undiluted, full experience of it. And I'm not gonna lie, it's a little scary. It's a little much sometimes. I'm aware of my own breath. People's eyes have more meaning. The sun is bright. A weird little subconscious part of me bleeds. Go back into the room with the phone, please. It's safe. It's easy. But I want to get out of the cave. We deserve to get out of the cave. And I know we'll do it together. And I believe with my whole heart and soul that once we do, we'll realize that there is so much good and beauty in the world and in one another that we were never going to see, going to experience online. I think we're going to take back our minds, our lives, our hearts, perhaps. And I think we're going to learn how to trust one another again. And I believe that we're going to realize that we don't have to be lonely after all. That there's a whole world out there. That there's also a lot of us. And we've got to be in it together. We've got to do it together. And it'll be good. I promise. So that's my little manifesto for Gen Z. I've never really been the type of person to ask anyone to share my content, because I think the motivations behind it are always just, like, growth, right? Like, well, I want as many followers as possible, I'm, like, trying to grow my channel or whatever. But this is, like, this is an essay or whatever you want to call it, or if you're listening to the podcast, like, an episode. I actually would really be grateful if you would share with someone, hopefully someone our age or, like, you know, a chronically online girly, because this is something I'm extremely passionate about and I think is necessary for the literal, like, survival and well-being of my generation. And I'm sick of people just, like, researching us and then writing, like, the children are sad, like, here's looking at you, Miss Jean. And I think that, you know, we gotta figure this out, because we have a whole generation of kids who are being raised by mommy and daddy iPads sometimes, and I think we need to get a better understanding of this, because, like I said, technology is morally neutral. Like, someone really brilliant told me that, and it's true. Like, we have the power to utilize this in a way that's beneficial for everyone, where the bar charts can just show, like, good things, good contributions, and I have a healthy amount of optimism and faith in people and love for the world to think that we're going to figure this out. But in order to figure it out, we have to really get a grasp on our own minds first. And in order to do that, I think we need to take steps to get our minds back. Thanks for listening, y'all. I appreciate you.